brilliant and sometimes strange minds, methods, and ideas from the sales profession's past with applications to today. Here is your host, best-selling author of The Transparency Sale and The Transparent Sales Leader, keynote speaker, trainer, and nerd, Todd Caponi.
What is sales? I mean, why does sales exist the way that it does? If you really take a step back and think about the sales profession today, where you've got companies that have hired reps, they've trained the reps, they've given them dedicated territories, they're paying them variable compensation, they're doing sales kickoffs, they're doing training, there's forecasting, there's CRMs. Like, how did we get here? Well, I was asked that simple question a few months back, and I really dug into, all right, how would I answer this question? And I thought, you know what, this would make a good podcast episode. So I'm going to attempt to answer, why does sales exist the way it does? And then take you to a place of thinking through, if that's the way that it is today, based on what things were like 100 years ago, are we ready for another change? So let's just start. And there's a reason why I'm asking this question and answering it the way that I am. But what is sales? Like, let's tear it down to the studs. What is sales? Sales is essentially business getting. Going out and getting business. Drumming it up for whatever product or whatever company that you're representing. So if we go back to its core and go as far back as the Roman Empire, sales was originally commission only, if at its core. You sold because you had no other choice. If you had something others wanted, you weren't running Facebook ads and selling on Amazon. I mean, you sold what you had and kept the difference to survive. So essentially, that's kind of a commission only. Nobody's paying you a salary if you produce something and you went out and sold it. Whatever that profit was, you kept it. That, the Roman Empire, you know, a little bit before and after BC AD, it was that way for the most part for thousands of years. Individuals and quote-unquote companies that made things to sell either did it themselves at regular market day events, or they hired independent salespeople who traveled the country repping multiple products, oftentimes known as bagmen or drummers. These bagmen were known for hard drinking, telling jokes, and selling really without a care for the accuracy of their pitch or for the outcomes the customer would receive. I mean, essentially, they sold and moved on. And like I said, it was that way all the way up into the late 1800s. If we look at some of the best philosophers in the sales profession, many of them speak of the late 1800s as being the low point for the sales profession. Not trusted. Individuals like the managing director of the National Council of Traveling Salesmen's Association speaking on that era with disdain, saying a girl was disgraced if she was seen with a traveling salesman. Now, it started to change in the late 1800s, and that's where we start to get to, why does sales exist the way that it does? I mean, essentially, sales exists the way it does, and the approach that many now frown upon was established in the late 1800s, early 1900s, established our profession 125 years ago. So let's take a look at what that looked like. The progressive era of the Industrial Revolution was taking shape in the late 1800s. What that meant was advances were meaning that companies were building products at scale, and that level of grossness had to go away. Companies that manufactured things sprang up everywhere and couldn't essentially have drummers and bagmen repping their products along with others, creating bad impressions, competing against others in territory, selling the same product, and really not caring for the long term. I mean, reputation began to matter. Repeats began to matter. Transportation improved, so access did too. And so that long-term view began to matter. So what ended up happening? Well, organizations started to hire their own salespeople, and people like John Patterson at NCR and companies like the Burroughs Adding Machine and a number of others were not only hiring these salespeople, but they were giving them full paid training. They were giving them dedicated territories. Customer success began to matter. They started to pay salary plus variable compensation. I'm going to stop for a second and take a step back to something that I read from Arthur Sheldon in 1909. And it all ties together here. He spoke of a quote that apparently at the time had been said many a time, but then he ties it to the sales profession today and the way that we should be thinking about it. He said, "He who plans no further than the present is mentally blind. He who plans for a year ahead is a general. He who plans for a lifetime is a genius. He whose mental vision extends beyond his life and plans for generations yet to be is a seer, a prophet." Sheldon talked about this idea of, let us plan for the good of our children and our children's children and their children and the other fellow's children too. And then he ends this section with a quote that ties back to what I talked about, that sales is essentially business getting, right? Well, here's his quote. "There is more in business building than in business getting." And so when we talk about getting into the late 1910s and 1920s, customer success only mattered so much. As the market tightened in the early 1920s, high-pressure tactics sprang up. It was literally debated in all of the sales magazines that low-pressure sales was merely order-taking and that you had to convince buyers to buy for their own good, as essentially they were too stupid, apparently, to realize it otherwise when dollars were tight. Now, keep in mind, there was no Social Security, there was no 401k plans, and your odds of dying young were a lot higher in the first half of the century. I mean, you had to earn, and earn a lot to ensure you and your family would be taken care of for the rest of their lives. So money was the primary motivator for selling. So again, we think about why sales exists the way it does. The creation of many of these processes were based on a time where money was the primary motivator for selling. And given that buyers had no true means to spread the news of their dissatisfaction, not being able to leave a review, post about it on the socials, or even tell more than a few friends when they got together face to face, the cost of an unsatisfied customer was low too. So sales began to decline. Poor economics lowered sales ethics. It created more short-term thinking. And by the 1950s, sales had become gross again. I mean, back to this idea of sell to survive and deal with the consequences later. And that almost started to look like the times of the Roman Empire back all the way to the late 1800s. There was a time in the 1910s where the sales profession was taught in literally every university in the country and taught in many public high schools. By the 1950s and 60s, not a single university was teaching the skill of selling. And it's not because they didn't think it was important. It was mainly because no one would sign up. I mean, it's supply and demand. As companies in the early 1960s visited universities to recruit salespeople from upcoming graduates, candidates wouldn't even show up for interviews. I mean, they would rather leave college unemployed than even interview for a potential sales role. The profession of sales has been making a comeback. Now, if we think about the professional low, as it was said, was the late 1800s, and the professional high was probably the early 1900s, we've had some ebbs and flows along the way. I would argue that the early 1960s was a pretty low time too, but we're starting to see it come back. It's being taught in universities again. In 1975, the University of Nebraska at Kearney became the first to start offering sales as a professional curriculum. They were the first. Now it's being taught at over 300 universities. It's a major at over 100 universities, and they've even entrusted their students to me a few times, which is amazing. And those audiences, they're engaged, they're taking notes, they're asking questions. But when we look at the original design of the modern sales profession, that was late 1800s, early 1900s, and so much of that is exactly the way it is today. Now, as you've heard me argue, sales hasn't changed as much as it seems when we talk and listen and read on LinkedIn that sales has changed and buyers have changed. No, 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 they haven't. But there are a couple of things that tell us pretty conclusively that maybe the design and the way that sales exists today is ripe for change. I would point to two core reasons why. Number one is this as a service or subscription economy. Now back then, like I said, the sale was the peak. You would sell it and you would leave, and maybe you could go back and get some add-on sales or some kind of regular purchase, but it wasn't like a subscription. If you lost that customer, you just go find a few more. The deal is no longer the peak of the sales engagement. It's merely an early milestone on the path to having customers who stay, who buy more, and advocate on your behalf. And given that job changing is the norm in today's era, I mean, my dad worked at the same company for 4 years. You don't see that anywhere anymore. We've got to play the long game. It's become more of a requirement now than ever before. And our structures and our pay and the types of approaches that we take to selling haven't changed with that really important change. And then number two is the blowhorn by which dissatisfaction now travels is loud and getting louder. Bad news travels faster than good news, and today it travels at an all-time record. The truth always prevails. I do believe that the sales world is ripe for an adjustment to how success is measured and paid for. The long game has always helped companies win the long game, but today it helps you win the short game too. Incentives centered around that idea have never been more important to the sustainability of organizations and the attraction of talent to the sales profession. Remember what Arthur Sheldon said, that he who plans no further than the present is mentally blind. He who plans for a year ahead is a general. He who plans for a lifetime is a genius. He whose mental vision extends beyond this life and plans for generations yet to be is a seer, a prophet. And he talked about that there is more in business building than in business getting. He went on to talk about this idea that business building is the making of each customer a repeater, and also the making of each customer the first link in an endless chain to bring more customers. Unless you think of the other fellow and many other fellows, unless your actions are the result of the true brotherhood of man idea, you cannot so deal with the public that you, to the best possible extent, make of each customer a repeater in trade. What does that mean? Well, why does sales exist the way it does? Well, it exists the way it does at a time where the Industrial Revolution meant that we needed to hire our own salespeople, and the long game started to matter, but it only mattered so much. In my opinion, everything depends on the long game today. That winning the long game not only wins the long game, but it wins the short game too. What do I mean by that? I talk to clients and I talk to individual reps who are like, whoa, hey, you know what? If I find a client that's got anything other than lint in their wallet, I got to go get it. The economy is tough. We got to go get every dollar we can. And when I ask, well, when the customer finds out that maybe you weren't the best option for them, or maybe what was promised is not perfectly aligned to what reality sets in and looks like, what do you do? And their answer is, well, we deal with the dissatisfaction as it comes along. I would argue that winning the short game for the sake of only winning the short game may get you that revenue. It may get you that deal. But in today's environment and the direction we're going, it will cost you probably four deals that you never even knew existed because of that blowhorn by which people can share. And when that individual goes to other companies, it's going to cost you again. And when they don't repeat, your cost of sales is going to be higher. So your deal level profitability goes down too. Arthur Sheldon was referring to a quote in 1909 that was said before 1909. He who plans no further than the present is mentally blind. Why is it that so many of us in sales still think this way, that we're planning no further than the present? We are mentally blind. He who plans for a year ahead is a general. All right, that's pretty good. but he who plans for a lifetime is a genius, and he whose mental vision extends beyond his life and plans for generations yet to be is a seer, a prophet. Don't we need to start thinking that way in the way that we structure our go-to-markets and our sales compensation plans? We have got to play the long game, and I'm a believer that the structures and processes need to start to support those, and they're not quite there yet. We are still living with variable compensation plans that read exactly as they did in some of my books and magazines from literally 100 years ago. We need to start to evolve to encompass this idea of playing the long game and this as a service economy. So there's your answer. Why does sales exist the way it does? Well, there were some thought leaders and philosophers that developed this way. There were some pioneers to the profession that developed it this way back in the late 1800s and early 1900s. And for the most part, not much has changed. And there are things that are changing. So maybe it's time to embrace that. What do you think? This one was deep. Hopefully it gives you a good picture, especially if you're new to the podcast, of a kind of a brief history of the sales profession. But I would love to hear your feedback. If you want to challenge anything, please reach out. Go to toddcaponi.com. You can contact me through there. You can reach out to me on LinkedIn. Feedback, questions, thoughts, ideas for future podcast episodes. Would love that. It's normally questions like these. Why does sales exist the way it does? That leads to a podcast episode and sends me down this rabbit hole that I just enjoy being in. So thank you again, as always, for listening. And if you enjoy it, please review it and please tell your friends. All right. Thanks again.